You're listening to the ISF podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve and I are in conversation, exploring the role of cybersecurity, governance, and leadership in an age defined by rapid technological transformation. Artificial intelligence is now woven into daily business operations, risk models, customer engagement, and more. And while its benefits are significant, its risks are expanding just as quickly. Steve, good to have you here with us. Nice to see you.
Great to be here again, Tava.
Steve, let's begin with the big picture. You recently described the cyber landscape as not just evolving, but as maturing. And I want to know what that means, especially in the context of AI. So tell us more.
Yeah, I did. And I increasingly do that. And for me, it means that cybersecurity has finally moved beyond being a fairly narrow technical discipline. You know, we're no longer in a world where we can afford to treat cyber as something that gets bolted on after the fact. It's matured into being what I would call, anyway, a foundational element of business strategy and operational resilience. Particularly with AI, because you asked about that, we're seeing it touch every part of the organization, right the way from procurement through to product development, even into HR and other parts of the business. And as AI becomes increasingly embedded in decision-making processes, then security needs to follow. It needs to be involved from the very earliest stages, helping to shape how technologies are going to be adopted and deployed safely, securely, and really importantly, I think, guiding how risk is going to be assessed, not just in terms of some of the traditional stuff. We see a lot of talk of breaches and so on. But also, and I think this is much more important because it's more difficult to deal with, in terms of unintended consequences, things like reputational impact, some of the ethical considerations, of course. And so that's the maturity that I'm referring to. Cyber leaders stepping into the role of real strategic partners who are able to influence the future direction that a business is heading in and to shape that in some way.
That growing complexity is something that every business leader can feel. You've got larger attack surfaces, there are talent shortages, there are data residency issues, rapidly shifting regulation. So retaining control becomes more about coordination and less about constraint. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, I think for me, it's about striking a balance. And it is a delicate balance. So too much control, like over-regulation, over-engineering, micromanagement, that can really slow things down, slows innovation. But too little control creates chaos. So retaining control is about finding that sort of space between those different extremes, those different bookends, if you like. It's about putting in place some really clear guardrails, fostering shared responsibility, and really importantly, allowing innovation to flourish within a framework of strategic oversight. But it's also about recognizing some of the limits of control. You won't prevent every breach or indeed predict every disruption. I've said this over and over again, but what you can do is you can design systems and cultures and indeed governance models that respond well under that kind of pressure. And that for me is the new definition of control. It's resilience, but it's also adaptability, and it's also strategic alignment.
For our regular listeners, it's probably not going to come as a surprise that you are advocating for cyber to be integrated into every part of the business. But what does that actually look like in practice? Give us a clear picture.
At its core, it's about what I would call proactive alignment. Cybersecurity isn't something that should be consulted once a product or a service is nearly out the door, or when a compliance audit is on the horizon. And I see that a lot. It needs to be part of strategic planning right from the start. And that means including CISOs and security leaders in executive conversations, not just around technology investment, but around areas they haven't been involved in traditionally. So I'm thinking here about market expansion, mergers and acquisitions, brand development. It means translating cyber risk into business risk. Not we might get hacked, but this could disrupt operations, erode customer trust, or indeed trigger regulatory fines. And when cyber is involved early, it really can become a value enabler. It helps the business make much, much smarter bets, helps it to avoid blind spots and build that sort of trust that we're looking for into everything that it does.
This really is a maturation of cyber. Years ago, we were not talking about it in quite this way. So I like the way this is evolving. One of the recommendations you make is workforce reskilling. AI is changing the nature of work, and we don't yet quite know where we're going to end up. But it sounds like you're saying, as you've said before, AI does not replace people. It redefines what people do. Is that fair? And do you think that you are an outlier in that belief? Or are you one of the growing voices of leaders who are saying that is the way things are? AI does not replace, but redefine human workforces.
It's a really interesting question, because in this regard, I hadn't imagined that I was an outlier. But increasingly, the more I talk about it, it seems that I am. My position is dead simple. Right? AI is a tool. It's a very clever tool, but it's a tool. And that's where people start to disagree with me. But there is a myth out there, I believe, that AI is going to eliminate huge groups of the workforce. And in reality, I don't see them being eliminated. I see their jobs changing. I see the roles shifting. Reshaping is what we're talking about. So tasks are shifting. But I don't ever see the need for human judgment or creativity or ethical thinking disappearing and being overtaken by AI. And the example I always give, which causes people to smile, is I'm not aware of anybody who has had a cyber incident where the security team get up and say, that's fantastic. AI is going to fix all that. We're going to pop down to the local Starbucks and it'll give us a shout when everything's back up and running. That is not the reality. The reality is that when technology falls over, people pick it back up and get it back up and running. And so I think that when we look at the overall world, and again, this is where a lot of people disagree with me and say, oh, well, you know, AI will develop into being able to do all of this. And it won't. But what it will do is allow people to make use of their skills that are in that area of creativity and ethical thinking and judgment, as I've said, and allow a system to do some of the more boring, mundane stuff. And the real value that people will get is in combining those two component pieces. And that's why I keep talking about AI as a tool. So if you think about it again, another analogy would be a carpenter. Now, a carpenter will use a chisel or whatever it might be to create a work of art in terms of a cabinet. Is it the tool that did that, or is it the carpenter? The answer is it's both. And that, for me, has to be the future, the positive future for AI. And if we can look at it that way, then we begin to focus in a slightly different area. It means we've got to help people feel more confident rather than being threatened by technology. And also, if people feel that AI is being imposed on them, then again, they're going to resist it or use it unsafely. So we have to position it as part of an overall process of evolution, of learning, of innovation, that's going to help not just an organization, but also the individual develop and use a tool, a technology, in a smarter, safer, more interesting way.
You mentioned ethics. You might highlight the need, I think, for businesses to develop frameworks for not only AI governance, but for implementing ethical AI practices. And I have a question, which is, what happens if we don't do that?
When we talk about ethical AI governance, we're talking about more than just avoiding reputational damage or avoiding regulatory penalties. We're talking about actively shaping technology to serve human interests fairly, transparently, and really importantly, with accountability. So if organizations fail to implement a robust framework for ethical AI use, they risk a number of things. So first, they may unintentionally embed bias into their decision-making systems, bias that could affect hiring, it could affect lending, policing, healthcare outcomes, whole range of things, right? And these aren't hypothetical risks. We've already seen real-world examples of AI models denying qualified job applicants or misidentifying faces, making skewed predictions because of flawed data sets or opaque logic. Second, without clear governance, there's confusion around accountability. If an AI system makes an error, who's responsible? Is it the developer? Is it the data scientist? Is it the manager who approved its use? So without structure, These questions either go unanswered or are very difficult to answer, and that in turn then erodes trust. Third, in the absence of governance, I think that organizations actually miss a great opportunity to use AI as a force for good. So with the right frameworks, AI can help improve equity, boost productivity, enhance customer experience. Importantly, support better decision-making in a whole range of different areas. But that only happens when we actively guide how the systems are trained and tested and deployed, and really importantly, monitored. So ethical AI governance is not a nice to have. It's essential.
Right.
It requires clear principles around fairness, explainability, and really importantly, harm reduction. So it demands diverse voices in the room when models are being built. And it calls for an ongoing review and adaptation as the technology and its applications evolve. So we're not just shaping bland business outcomes here. We're actually shaping the future of work, shaping the future of trust and human-machine collaboration, people and tools. And we need to do that with care. And to get the best from it, both sides need to be trained in how to get the best from each other.
Let's talk about AI-specific risks. Shadow AI, this is a term that we are hearing more and more. What is shadow AI?
Well, shadow AI refers to the use of AI tools and platforms without the knowledge or what I've just been talking about, the oversight of the organization's central security or governance team. So it's the AI equivalent of shadow IT, and that's probably how people would best understand it. And it's growing because these AI tools are accessible and they're fast, and in many cases, they're incredibly useful and easy to access. The problem is that they often bypass safeguards. Employees may be uploading sensitive data into, say, public platforms. They could be generating content or code without any oversight. Or they could even be building customer-facing applications without understanding, perhaps, the full risk picture. And that creates exposure on a number of fronts. So security, data security, legal compliance, brand reputation. And then as with most shadow systems, even though the intent is rarely malicious, because it's usually driven by a desire to move fast or to solve a problem, we run the risk of it becoming malicious. So without governance, that agility that we're trying to build into our business processes becomes dangerous. We have to have visibility, we have to have policies, and we have to have education to bring shadow AI into the light. And some of that at the moment is significantly missing. So the vast majority of people who are rolling out AI programs do not have some of these policies, some don't have some of this visibility, haven't implemented some of that level of education.
So what else do businesses need to be watching out for when it comes to AI and cyber and security?
AI, it does introduce a huge amount of potential, but it also introduces a new layer of risk that is more complicated, dynamic, and probably difficult to manage than many people actually think or are prepared for. And one of the biggest challenges is that AI doesn't just create new vulnerabilities. It changes the nature of the threat landscape completely. So we're already seeing threat actors use AI to scale and personalize attacks. Phishing emails, for instance, they're no longer riddled with spelling errors. They're polished, they're well-timed. The good ones even mimic the tone of internal communications. Malware is being adapted, repurposed by generative tools to evade traditional defenses. And deepfakes, which once were something of a novelty, and we've talked about those many times in the past, they're now a really serious vector for social engineering and disinformation and identity-based attacks. But it isn't just what attackers are doing either. The risks also stem from how organizations are using AI internally, again, often without sufficient controls. So shadow AI, as we just talked about, is just one example of that. There are also risks, though, around data exposure, the way in which models might be manipulated, bias amplification, unintended automation. So all of that comes down to what can leaders do? What should we be doing to protect the organization? The first step, I think, is to establish some strong data governance. AI systems are only going to be as trustworthy as the data they're trained on. So that means we need to put in place very clear controls around data sourcing, quality, labeling, retention, and of course, access.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know what data is being used, where it came from, how it's been vetted, whether it aligns with your organization's values and risk posture. Secondly, I always encourage organizations to consider investing in defensive AI. Now, this is about how you can use AI to fight AI. So employing machine learning for anomaly detection or automated threat response or behavioral analytics. And these tools can really help security teams keep pace with adversaries who are already automating their methods. But, and this is a critical point, these defensive capabilities have to be trained and they have to be monitored and they have to be integrated into the broader cybersecurity space. So AI doesn't eliminate the need for skilled analysts. It enhances their reach. And third, we can't talk about protection without addressing governance and ethics. You have to have clear frameworks for AI oversight. That includes things like model explainability, impact assessment, human-in-the-loop safeguards, and continuous auditing. Who is responsible when something goes wrong? What's your escalation path? How do you ensure that your use of AI aligns with both regulatory expectations and internal codes of conduct? And that may mean that you have to change some of your business continuity processes, for example. Ultimately, the leaders who are going to be successful in this space won't be those who just adopt AI the fastest, but those who adopt it most responsibly in a measured and well thought through fashion. They'll be the ones who've taken the time to build secure foundations, to ask some really difficult questions, and ensure that innovation and integrity are advancing together.
Let's shift the conversation to regulation, which we've discussed many times in recent episodes and long past episodes. We've got a patchwork of AI laws emerging globally and the issues that this landscape causes for businesses are complex. How should businesses be preparing?
Yeah, you're right. So the first step in this is awareness. You need to know where you're operating and what the emerging regulatory expectations are. And as you know, Tavia, I usually caution against too much regulation. I'm not a big fan. But when it comes to AI, so much is happening that there needs to be, I think, some form of government guardrail in place. But what we're seeing now on that front is concerning. I had always hoped, using GDPR as an example, that we might move towards some kind of global consistency in this space, because I think it's absolutely needed. But we're not there. So if you look at the EU's AI Act, for example, it's probably the most comprehensive framework we've seen so far, with a risk-based classification model and very clear obligations for providers and users of high-risk AI systems. Switch across to the US. The US is still much more in a state of providing guidance, I would say, through things like executive orders or voluntary commitments. I think that will probably tighten a little bit in the coming years, but I don't think it's ever going to move away to being what I think is required, which is a federal regulation. I think you're still going to see individual states being able to call the shots on that one. The UK is introducing legislation, but it's in a sort of to be determined really on what will come out of it. It's focusing more on how you might create an environment that is more AI friendly for investment. And then if you go to China, which is moving very quickly and assertively, it's all about centralized controls and requirements that reflect very different political and cultural priorities. So it's a little bit of a mishmash, a bit of a patchwork quilt, really. So businesses face a very serious governance challenge. How do you build a global AI program when the rules are totally fragmented, the interpretations are fluid, and enforcement is uneven, and some would say almost impossible? And the answer lies in establishing, I think, internal governance frameworks that are principle-driven, not just law-driven. Because if you chase compliance in every direction, you're never going to get anywhere. But if you anchor your governance in core values, like transparency, like accountability, safety, human oversight, you're going to be much better positioned to adapt to whatever it is that regulation eventually ends up looking like.
Right.
And it isn't just about avoiding fines. So the real risk of falling behind on AI regulation is operational reputational. If you launch a system that's later deemed to be non-compliant, you might face product recalls or service disruptions, or indeed, worst case, you're going to have to completely redesign core features. Worse, if you're seen to be careless, putting customers, employees, or society at risk, the damage to your brand could be long-lasting. And that's why it can't sit in just one department. It's got to be a cross-functional effort. Legal, compliance, security, data science, product, all of the appropriate areas, all working together to build a governance model that isn't just reactive, but it's also forward-looking. And that's where strategic foresight is absolutely critical. So you need to get legal and compliance and risk and cyber working together to build policies that meet today's requirements and can adapt to tomorrow's.
Your favorite question of all time, where's the role of the board in all of this?
Favorite question. Yes, I spend so much time working with these guys. And indeed, I have to say, have seen, we talked about maturity earlier on. Boards have matured hugely when it comes to cyber, and they're galloping along to try to understand what AI means. So the board plays a really crucial role in AI governance, not just in terms of oversight, but in shaping the organization's direction, its risk appetite, and its ethical foundation. And that role is only becoming more important as AI moves from a technical function into a core element of business strategy. And what boards need to understand, first and foremost, is that AI is no longer experimental. So it's embedded in customer engagement. It's embedded in operational decision-making, processes, supply chain, across every business function, actually. And that means the risks and responsibilities associated with AI are no longer confined to the IT department. They belong at the highest levels of leadership. So what does the board need to know? Because this is the question I get all the time when I'm talking to boards. What do we actually need to know? And there's a few key areas that I'd focus on. First, the board needs a clear picture of how AI is being used across the organization. Where are models being deployed? Who owns them? What decisions are they influencing? It's all about visibility, because without visibility, you can't govern. Second, the board needs to understand who is accountable for outcomes. So if an AI tool denies someone a job offer or a loan or a benefit, for example, who takes responsibility for that? Who approved the system? Who reviewed the data? So boards have to ensure there's clear accountability at every level. Thirdly, the board should be asking how ethical concerns are being identified and addressed. Are we reviewing for bias, for instance? Are we engaging diverse perspectives in our development process? Are we putting people in the loop where necessary? AI governance has to be built on a foundation of fairness, transparency, and human oversight. Boards also need to know how the governance model itself is evolving. AI isn't standing still, and so neither can policies. Is the board monitoring changes in regulation, for instance? Are we conducting regular audits? Do we have a cross-functional governance committee that includes risk and compliance and legal and HR and security? And then finally, as if that wasn't enough, the board needs to understand the strategic implications of AI adoption. What's the impact going to be on brand trust, or perhaps on regulatory exposure, on workforce culture and capability? And these aren't just operational concerns. They go directly to the long-term health and resilience and future of the business. And what I often say to board members is this: you don't need to be an AI expert, because a lot of people are put off by this. You don't need to be an AI expert. You do need to be an AI literate leader. That means asking informed questions, it means insisting on transparency, and it means ensuring the organization's values are reflected in the way AI is used. Because at the end of the day, AI will shape how your organization is perceived by the customers, by the regulators, by your own employees, and of course, the wider public. And that is most certainly a board-level issue.
Where do the CISOs and security leaders fall in ethical leadership? And as you said, not holding themselves to an impossible standard of absolute expertise, but informed and confident literacy of AI as it rapidly changes.
Well, CISOs, I think, play a pretty critical role, pivotal, I would say, in bridging the technical and the strategic. So they need to be able to articulate risk in business language, to translate concepts like data drift and adversarial learning into terms like financial exposure and operational disruption. And perhaps most importantly, they need to be able to lead across silos in the business. AI governance doesn't belong solely to IT or security. It's a collaborative thing that spans compliance and legal and HR and all of the others we've just been talking about. And so security leaders need to make sure that they can build those relationships, lead that dialogue, and ensure that AI governance is this multifaceted team that's being put together. And that is a really exciting opportunity for CISOs, because they have never been in a position to be able to do that before, I would say.
Before we wrap, I want to come back to something that you said early on, that retaining control is not about resisting change. It is about leading through. Tell us more about that.
Absolutely. That's the heart of it. AI is not some kind of future technology. It's been around for a very long time, certainly in cyber terms anyway, at least 10 years, if not more. It's a lifetime in cyber. So it's not a future technology. It's here. It's shaping the way that we work, that we think, and indeed that we compete. So the question isn't whether we should engage with it. It's how do we do so responsibly and effectively. And the organizations that retain control are those that lead with clarity. They understand their values. They haven't just fallen into this. It's a thought through process. They know the risks. They empower their people appropriately. And they build systems, technological, ethical, cultural, that are built to adapt, that recognize that there is no such thing as the status quo. It changes second by second. And, you know, that isn't about having all the answers. And for some people, that makes it very uncomfortable, because for a lot of businesses, strategy is founded on concrete answers. In this new world, it's about how you ask the right questions. It's about how you set the right tone and how you lead with purpose and how you maintain the ability to be adaptable and flexible. And that is how we're going to retain control in uncertain times.
I really appreciate this conversation, which is wide-ranging, as so many of our conversations are. And I think my takeaway is, if you as an organization and a leader don't have clarity about what your values and ethics are, you better get started, because everything hinges from those core fundamentals.
I think it does. And actually, I think that's quite a refreshing way for businesses to look at things, to use a technological tool as a means of getting back in touch with why they actually exist. Maybe that's one of the other benefits or advantages that we haven't touched on.
I'm sure that we will continue the conversation and revisit ethics, governance, leadership. I really appreciate you walking us through it today, and we will be back again in the future for more.
Fantastic. Thanks, Tavia.
Thank you, Steve. We'll be back with another new episode next week. In the meantime, if you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast, and we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become an ISF member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.